Hey friends, and welcome to It's Better When You're Here podcast. My name is Pastor Michael, and I get to be the pastor of Shepherd's Community United Methodist Church, one church at two locations in Central Florida. This is the sermon that we preach this week. I hope that the message inspires you and encourages you and reminds you that God loves you. All right, here's the message.
Stephanie, what does it mean to you to live or lead like a girl?
I've thought about this, and my perspective on it has definitely shifted a lot in my life, which I think is significant. But I think what I've learned thus far, and something that I'm trying to lean into heavily at the moment, or at least at this stage in my life, is trusting my intuition and being able to be in touch with that part of me and trusting it, and having that be a part of what leads me. And I think that as women, that's a strength and something that we can lean on, and something that sometimes is not emphasized or readily accepted.
Why don't you tell us your name, a little bit about your family and how you got connected to Shepherd's.
Okay. My name is Stephanie Beaudelet. I'm an attorney. I'm married. My husband, I have three kids, Olivia, Remy, and Nico. And we got connected with the church through a friend. I practice assisted reproductive law, which means that I handle the legal side of what individuals or couples would need to form their family in a non-traditional way using assisted reproduction, like IVF, surrogacy, things like that. And there's a very human element to it where I felt like it worked. It felt like a combination of a lot of things that felt familiar to me. I think that I've been able to contribute to my job. It's felt comfortable for me because I've always had a side to myself that is very stereotypically, I guess, attorney-like, in the sense that I do, you know, I get fired up when it comes to wanting to protect someone or stand up for someone and be there for that person. And that side of me and the A-type student side fits into the traditional aspect of what an attorney would be, I suppose. But like everyone, you know, there are different dimensions to us, there are different sides to us. And I think this field in particular allows me to kind of use other skills, other parts of me, you know, my maternal side, my intuitive side, my emotional side, all of that. I can kind of combine that.
Have you ever felt underestimated as a woman in your field? And how did you respond?
Short answer is yes. All the time, actually. This might be my own perspective, but I do think that there are some fields where it's more, the disparity is more emphasized than others. And in my personal experience, it's definitely something. I remember interning, and a lot of the women that I interned for while I was still in school, in law school, they had these stories where, you know, one of them, she was the only female in her law school class, and it was a constant reminder of how we're not that far from these shifts having happened. Meanwhile, I was, you know, women made up, I think, 51% of my law school class. But you're still entering the workforce with women that are working in it that didn't experience the same thing. And so you're still kind of in this place of transition where you are, it's available to you. I'm able to do it. I'm able to pursue it. But then what does that look like? So there's still a lot of misconceptions, a lot of things. I have colleagues that'll walk into a courtroom and the assumption is you're not, you know, they're not the attorney. They're there to do something else. And And even with clients, especially at the beginning, I worked at a firm where I worked with an older male attorney, and the way people interacted with him and then the way people interacted with me, there were very stark differences. And it's not that it needs a reaction in the moment, but all of those little things do impact you.
What fears do you have to overcome in your career?
Imposter syndrome, for sure. I've been doing this for a long time now. I've presented on the matter. I've written on the matter. I've spoken everywhere. And my assumption is not that I still question everything. And I think that's something that I intentionally, I'm trying to work on. And also not being afraid to trust myself. I think in the last few years, I've really held true, not being afraid of saying no or not taking a case or not working with someone when I know that I shouldn't. And not being afraid to upset other people if it means doing what you know is going to be right for either yourself or the clients or whatever it is.
In your career as an attorney, you can't control the outcome. How do you keep your heart guarded, but also your mind focused when you can't control the outcome?
So I think that is the life lesson, for not just work, but life in general. Not being able to control. I think that has been a lesson the world has been putting in front of me the last couple of years. And it's interesting because in the field of law, my soul, not my soul, but a big part of my purpose, for example, in drafting a contract, would be to try to think of every possible scenario so that it is controlled, so that you know the outcome, so that we can prevent bad things from happening. And at the end of the day, even with the best of the best, we're dealing with people, and there's an aspect that you will not ever be able to control. And that's a conversation that I also have with my clients. There's a certain level of faith, in a sense, that you're going to have with the people that you're working with and that you have to have, because it doesn't matter how much effort you put into something, there's always that margin of unpredictability, things you cannot control. So you have to trust in yourself and know that you did what you could, and the rest is part of your journey.
If you could sum it up, what does it look like to have faith like a girl?
To have faith like a girl, I think embracing with confidence, embracing all aspects of yourself, and not letting the world shut down those parts of you that are invaluable to leading your most purposeful and authentic life.
Stephanie, who attends worship at our chapel campus, sharing what it means to have faith like a girl. In this series, we are going to be looking at the stories of women that are so central to the story of the Bible that are often put on the sidelines or silenced. And I'm so glad that we get to be a part of a church that gets to put those stories towards the front. And so throughout this series, we're going to hear from people that are a part of our church share their stories, women that are a part of our church and share their stories. They're not all the stories, but they're stories that are worth hearing. And I'm glad we get to bring those stories to the front so that we can hear them over the choir, the voices of misogyny, and we just get to be louder than that. I'm glad I get to lend my voice to the chorus of people whose faith has been shaped, shored up by women. If you grew up in the church like I did, you know that your faith was started and founded by the Mrs. Elmores, the Mrs. Browns, the Mrs. Joneses, the Miss Smiths, far before a Reverend anybody showed up. That sort of time where Werther's original got shoved into my mouth so I would stop talking and I could learn something. That happened because of women. And even before then, in the nursery, getting loved and cared for by the women of the church. And so, of course, it makes sense for us to tell these stories and to listen to these stories. This morning, we get to hear about Miriam. Everyone say Miriam. Miriam is Moses's older sister and is a central figure in the Exodus story. The Exodus story is the story of the Israelites leaving oppression in Egypt and finding the promised land. In our story today, we're going to learn how Miriam, the older sister of Moses, was able to show up and stand by even when it was difficult, even when it required immense faithfulness. So the thing I'm going to say a lot today, the thing that I hope gets stuck in your head, the first thing you can type into your Church Center app is this: may we be faithful like Miriam. May we be willing to show up. May we be faithful like Miriam. May we be willing to show up. If you took those notes in your church app, go ahead and keep your phone open because you're going to have to Google this Bible verse yourself because we're having some technical difficulties, as you can see. If you have a paper Bible, Exodus is where we're going to be going. That's the second book of the Bible. So just kind of go towards the front. You'll find it there. We'll be reading from Exodus chapter 2 and reading verses 2 through 8. Here at Shepherd's, we have a tradition where the reader will say, "This is the word of God for us, the people of God." Then all of you will say, "Thanks be to God." But we like to add a little extra oomph on the end, so we add the word "woo." So be ready with your "woo." Hear the word of the Lord. The woman became pregnant and gave birth to a son. She saw that the baby was healthy and beautiful, so she hid him for 3 months. When she couldn't hide him any longer, she took a reed basket and sealed it up with black tar. She put the child in the basket and set the basket among the reeds in the riverbank. The baby's older sister stood watch nearby to see what would happen. Pharaoh's daughter came down to bathe in the river, while her women servants walked along beside the river. She saw the basket among the reeds, and she sent one of her servants to bring it to her. When she opened it, she saw the child. The boy was crying, and she felt sorry for him. She said, "This must be one of the Hebrews' children." Then the baby's sister said to Pharaoh's daughter, "Would you like me to go and find one of the Hebrew women to nurse the child for you?" Pharaoh's daughter agreed, "Yes, do that." So the girl went and called the child's mother. This is the word of God for us, the people of God. Thanks be to God. Very good.
Hey friends, it's Pastor Michael. We are just so grateful for every last one of you that listens to the It's Better When You're Here podcast. We are so excited that we get to share in this work of ministry and the messages that are preached every week at Shepherd's Community United Methodist Church. We wanted to give you an opportunity. If you want to be a part of what God is doing here at Shepherd's here in Central Florida, and you would like to give, you can go to shepherdsumc.com/give. And you can find a way to give that way. Any support really helps us produce this podcast, but also helps us love our neighborhood around the world very, very well. So thank you for tuning in, and now back to the podcast.
So in this passage, we see a couple different things. You may have heard this story before. Maybe you learned about it in Sunday school from the Mrs. Elmores, the Mrs. Johnsons, the Miss Smiths that taught you these things. Or you watched that wonderful documentary, Prince of Egypt, the animated Disney movie, the story of Moses and Aaron and Miriam. What an incredible movie. The opening scene of that movie could be a movie within itself, and yet that's the story that we're learning here together today. The Pharaoh of Egypt decides that the Hebrews can no longer live, and so he has a government program to kill all of the young Hebrew boys. Now, this is a very Bronze Age story, and so that's why you're hearing Bronze Age themes where death was sort of common. It's a bit grisly for us as modern human beings, but that's where the story starts. And in this story, Moses' parents decide decide to have a child in a time when it is very dangerous to have one. And so when the child is born, the mother hides the baby for as long as she can until she can no longer hide the baby and decides to try something else. Moses gets put inside of a basket covered in tar. Now, you might be curious as to where this idea of tar comes from. Well, scholars of the Bible will know that when God tells Noah to make an ark, he is told to cover the inside of that ark with tar. If you've ever had a wicker basket, you don't even have to be a scholar of the Bible, you can realize those things are porous. And so the mom is not trying to, you know, is trying to protect Moses, the baby. Moses's mom is trying to protect him. And so he is in this basket and he is put afloat. Now he's stuck at the riverbank, in the reeds at the riverbank. So again, that documentary, Prince of Egypt, may not be exactly right. If you watch that movie, you see that he's floating around and there's crocodiles and there's hippos and there's boats, all of those things. And maybe that's not exactly what happened, but Moses is being stuck at the riverbank. And Miriam goes and stands by. Miriam does not grab Moses out of the float, but instead stands by. Sometimes showing up means being present and not active. So often as a pastor, and so often as a Christian, you might end up feeling as if you're not doing anything when you listen to someone who's going through a difficult time. When you hear of someone suffering, when you hear about opportunities to serve at Gospel Village or PAC Kids PAC, you can feel like you're not doing very much. Miriam teaches us here that sometimes showing up means being present and not active. Sometimes faithfulness looks like showing up and being nearby. Miriam's gut tells her to follow along, and she does. May we be faithful like Miriam. May we be willing to show up. In this video, you saw enough to know that Stephanie and Miriam both understand the value of standing by. If you weren't able to hear, Stephanie, who worships at Chapel Campus, practices a kind of law that helps parents become parents in non-traditional ways, so either through IVF or surrogacy. Stephanie helps these parents navigate the legal waters in order to begin a family if they are not able to do so in the traditional way. So Stephanie shows up, she walks alongside these people in the most difficult upside down, topsy-turvy times. Imagine being a new parent, but also having to go to court about it. That would be something that would make it even more difficult. And what Stephanie does is she stands at the riverbank with parents as they make that move. Stephanie and Miriam both understand the value of standing by. And because of their faithfulness, Miriam and Stephanie both get to see new life. You see, Miriam stays. Because of that, she is able to bring community. I couldn't imagine what it would be like to stand by and see a baby in a basket down by the river. The other day, I was going for a run around Lake Hollingsworth, and I saw three of the largest alligators I have ever seen in my life. And the reason why they were by the edge of the lake is because there was an otter in the riverbank, or on the edge, in the reeds, right? Don't worry, they got bored and decided to move on. But we all know how that could have gone. We've seen National Geographic, right? We know how that could have gone, and Miriam had to stand by. Sometimes faithfulness means showing up and not trying to fix. So often we as, and I feel this so much as a follower of Jesus, feel as if I could show up and fix things in people's lives, but instead what is being asked of me is faithfulness. Imagine, if you will, Miriam comes by and takes the basket out of the water and runs away. What ends up happening is that the Pharaoh's government finds this baby and ends Moses' life, ends this story. But because Miriam is willing to be faithful and stand by, Moses is found by Pharaoh's daughter. And again, if you've watched The Prince of Egypt, you know that he grows up, learns about his call, and hears from the God of the universe from a burning bush, and then leads the Hebrew people out of enslavement. None of that happens if Miriam is not as faithful as Miriam can be. May we all be faithful like Miriam. May we be willing to show up. Theologians call this scene the baptism of Moses. Now, I don't want to give you parenting advice unless you ask for it, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say, don't put your babies in baskets and then put them on the riverbank, okay? Please don't. It is frowned upon and potentially a federal offense, I'm sure. But Moses is saved by this baptism of sorts. Moses is put into this water. Now, this baptism is a little bit different than my baptism. My baptism was at First Baptist Church of Weymouth when Dr. Fletcher had me stand up in the water. I remember that it was very cold. We did not have a heated baptismal font. Why? I don't know. I guess they were surprised that it was cold in Weymouth in January. And I remember that I was asked questions in front of the congregation. I was able to answer them. And then I got dunked coming up, you know, gasping for breath. Again, very, very cold. That was what my baptism was like. Moses' baptism was a little bit different. It was on a riverbank. There were crocodiles. There were hippos. Pharaoh's daughter was nearby. Pharaoh's daughter did not return the RSVP to my baptism. So it was very different, but it was a saving. And that's also different for us. You see, we here in the United Methodist Church, we find something called the middle way, or via media. On this side, our Roman Catholic, our Orthodox friends believe that baptism is the thing that makes you right with God. This moment where at the application of water and prayer, you become a saved person. You become a Christian in that moment. We believe some of that, but not all of that. So we're not like our friends over here. And over here, we have friends who practice something called Anabaptism, or believer's baptism, where they believe that baptism is a moment of profession. When the person says, I have decided to follow Jesus, and so I am going to be baptized to proclaim that I am following God. This is what believer's baptism is. We don't really believe that. Here in the United Methodist Church, we will baptize anybody. You don't even have to say that you want to be baptized. We will baptize you. And so we baptize babies. We baptize older people. I, on one Sunday, got to baptize someone who was 78, 76, and also someone who was 8 months old on the same Sunday. I asked, it was our good friend Doug. I asked Doug, why didn't you get baptized until now? He said, I never got around to it. And I'm so glad that he did. In that moment, we got to baptize him. And we believe that baptism is a mixture of these two things. It is a moment when God shows up and says, that one's mine. Claims this child, doesn't save us, but rather claims us as God's own. And then a community stands up and says, this one belongs to us. We are going to love this child. We are going to love this person. We are going to carry them along. This middle way of believing in baptism is what saves us, because it's only because of Moses' baptism and the faithfulness of Miriam that he truly lives. That Moses truly lives. You know, we don't believe that baptism saves you, but we believe that baptism helps you truly live. May we be as faithful as Miriam. May we be willing to show up. Like I said, our baptism does not save us, but it is how we live. It is in the joining of a community that we gain a group of people who are willing to stand by. I remember when Annabelle, my tiny little 119-month-old baby, who's turning 10 next month, was baptized. I remember it very, very well. It was at nap time. And so parents of little ones, you understand how precarious nap time is, right? That's when your sweet little baby angel becomes a pipe bomb in, you know, in human form, right? You don't know if they're going to be goofy and happy and wonderful to be around or, you know, a terrorist. And I knew that baptism was happening at the moment of nap time. I was very concerned. So I'm stood there feeling like I got a time bomb on my hip, right? And the entire community of the church that I served in Winter Park made vows to this baby. The water got applied. She didn't even scream. And then we paraded her around and sang a lullaby. More on that in just a moment. But for parents that might be impressed by this, we sat down after the baptism. She went, eh, and I put the pacifier in her mouth, immediately passed out. And I was like, yes, I've won parenting. This is very good. This is a good moment. But in that moment, she was joined into a community. A community of people said, that one's ours. When someone is baptized, we promise to be their Miriam. When someone comes to Shepherds, we promise to be their Miriam, to show up. If you read the United Methodist Book of Worship, don't get a hobby. But if you do, you'll see there's a rite for those that are brought by others, a rite for those brought to baptism by others. If you've seen when we baptize a baby, I ask, what name has been given to this child? It is to acknowledge the reality that this person is coming, not under their own volition, but because someone like Miriam stood by at the basket by the riverbank. Someone brought them along. Because of the faithfulness of Miriam, we have the story of Moses. And because of the story of Moses, we have the story of Jesus. Because of the story of Jesus, we have now the church. In our baptism liturgy, we have this line here that says, when we're making vows to the person to be baptized, we promise to surround them with a community of love and what's that purple word? That they may grow in their trust of God and be found faithful in their service to others. What a claim. A community of love and what was that word?
Forgiveness.
Forgiveness. What a bold claim to make for a baby. The thing about babies is they will not dent your car as they get out of their car here at the church parking lot. They will not post something on Facebook that will offend you deeply. They will not steal your car when you're not looking. Babies are really good about those things. You know, they've got other qualities that aren't the best, a little needy, not very self-reliant, but babies will at least treat you that way. And so when we as a church community say, we're going to surround that baby with a community of love and forgiveness, that's really easy to do for a baby and harder to do for an adult. What that means is that faithfulness, what that means is that we are going to show up for them on their first day of sobriety and their second first day of sobriety. We're going to show up for them when their marriage begins, and we're going to show up for them when their marriage ends. We're going to show up for them when they get the diagnosis. We're going to show up for them when they get news that they're clear. We are going to show up for them and keep showing up for them because we are going to be faithful like Miriam, a community of love and forgiveness. We stand by. So I don't know if you remember your baptism. I remember both of them. You're really only supposed to get baptized once, but more on that later. But I want you to experience something that those that are baptized here at Shepherds get to experience. And it's something called Child of Promise. If you've ever seen a baptism, it's the lullaby that we sing to babies when they are baptized, or little ones. Most recently, our friend Finn Wagoner got baptized. I offered to throw him over my shoulder and carry him around the sanctuary. He declined. It's fine. One day someone will take me up on that. But we sing this song to people when they get baptized here to remind them that God has claimed them and that we will show up for them. So you may not remember your baptism, and I don't think any of you have had this sung to you, but I wanted that to change today. So Michelle decided to say yes to a crazy idea. And what we're going to do is, in just a moment, we're going to sing this song together, but you're going to sing your name instead of the name of the child. It's going to sound like this.
God claims you. God helps you, protects you.
And you may not know all of the words, and that's okay. You can mumble along, but I think most of you know your own name, right? So you're going to sing that as heartily as you can as we sing together. Michelle, will you lead us? So now you know that God claims you. God helps you, protects you, and loves you too. This community is here for you, because I just heard everyone sing that to each other and to ourselves. When you show up to Shepherds, you are surrounded by faithful Miriams. At this church, you are surrounded by faithful Miriams. Make sure you know them. Make sure you know them. A couple of years ago, I woke up on a Sunday and realized that I was not going to be able to preach. Someone in my household got just sick enough on a Sunday morning that I realized someone's preaching at Shepherds, but it isn't me. And so I called Kevin Pichon, and I said, "Brother, it's just not going to happen." He said, "I got it." That's pretty good, Kevin Pichon. It's a pretty good one. Not only did he step up and lead and help and take care of the things that I couldn't take care of because I needed to be at home, later on that day, he showed up with one of his signature pizzas, but it was a veggie pizza because he knew that my wife is a vegetarian. That's the kind of Miriam stuff that this church does. Do you know something, I'm sure Kevin wouldn't mind me saying this. Do you know something interesting about Kevin? He makes pizzas for everyone that he loves. Kevin can't have tomato sauce. And so he just makes pizzas for people, and he never eats them. That's the kind of Miriam stuff that I see. And friends, I could fill up the next 3 hours. We could miss Kids Pack altogether, me telling Miriam story after Miriam story after Miriam story, because this is a church full of faithful, faithful Miriams. Make sure you know them. May we be faithful like Miriam. May we be willing to show up. So I've got two action steps for you today, my faithful Miriams. The first is this. I want you to find someone in this space that you will pray for this week. I want you to look around right now. Move the neck, move the head, look around, find someone, and decide that you are going to be praying for them. You don't even need to know their name. If you pray to God for that one guy with the weird look on his face, God knows who that is, and God made that look, all right? I want you to look around and find a person that you're gonna be praying for this week. And you do get bonus points for those keeping track at home if you find out their name, if you learn their name. Find someone you're going to pray for this week. And then secondly, I want you to reach out to someone and ask for them to be your Miriam or be a Miriam. Show up and be faithful and stand by in someone's life. I saw a TikTok this week. The guy was essentially saying, "I love showing up for success and cheering on as you succeed. What a gift that is." And this I felt like he was reading my mind. And he said, "But if you don't let me sit in the mud with you, if you don't let me sit down in the mud and suffer alongside you, if you don't let me do that, we're going to have beef. If you don't let me celebrate your win, if you let me celebrate your wins, but you don't let me sit in the mud with you," that's what life is. To be a Miriam is to be there when it is very, very good and when it is very, very difficult. That's what it means to have faith like Miriam. May we be faithful like Miriam. May we be willing to show up.
Hey friends, thank you so much for joining us this week. I hope that this message connected with you and inspired you. Please reach out to us on social media or through our website. We would love to know if this is your church family. If this message meant something to you, please share it with someone that you know or you love, or share it on social media. We know that it would be so much better with you here, so much better with the whole world, knowing of God's great love for all of us. Have a great week and be blessed.